Well, relations between the United States and Russia have hit another rough patch. Good morning. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. After Russian President Vladimir Putin granted asylum to intelligence contractor Edward Snowden, President Barack Obama has canceled a scheduled meeting with his counterpart in Moscow during the upcoming G20 summit. We'll talk about what that means, and we'll talk about the state of relations between the United States and Russia this hour with Harlow Robinson, Matthews Distinguished University Professor in the Department of History at Northeastern University in Boston. He's an expert on Russian history and culture and deserves extra credit today for talking to us, even though he's on vacation in the Berkshires. Professor, welcome to the program, and thank you so much for taking time out of your vacation to help us out here today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So how would you describe, in 500 words or less, how would you describe our current relationship with Russia?
Well, it's definitely a little bit rocky at this point, I think you could definitely say. I mean, it's certainly not the worst I've ever seen or remember, but it's definitely in a downward, it seems on a downward slope, especially since Obama has come into his second term, I think you could say.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of us can remember when things were a lot different. Boris Yeltsin was the president of Russia, and gosh, we couldn't have been chummier since Vladimir Putin took over. Things have changed. Is it that simple, or what has happened to change the way change the nature of our relationship with Russia?
Well, I think you're definitely right to remember the 1990s. That was a period when I was spending a lot of time in the former Soviet Union, and it was just everything American was wonderful. Americans were loved and celebrated. American culture was about all you could get in Moscow in those days, American movies, everything. And there's been a very notable change since, I would say, since the year 2000. I mean, when Putin came into office, it was rather gradual. After all, Yeltsin selected Putin personally as his successor, and probably Yeltsin, of course, died a few years ago, would maybe be a little bit surprised at the way things have turned out. But I think also it reflects, however, a wider feeling among Russians that they somehow didn't get from America what they thought they would in the 1990s. And if you remember, there was this great euphoria, oh, well, Russia will just become another Western democracy, you know, just like the United States. And clearly it didn't work out that way at all economically. There were some very hard times for Russians in the 1990s. And if you speak to Russians, a baby boomer Russians, let's say, they don't remember the 90s fondly at all. It was, for most of them, a really terrible period. And I think many of them associate that pro-Americanism of the 1990s with something very negative. And there's been a real revival of Russian and even Soviet nationalism under Putin. And this is something he has very much exploited. He's brought back a lot of the symbols of the Soviet era, even the national anthem. And I think he's worked to sort of restore a sense of national pride. And I think the majority of the Russian population supports that.
Well, I some of the reading that I did prior to the program suggests that there has been a level of feeling of humiliation in the Russian populace, kind of over the way the whole Soviet Union came crashing down and the years after that, when Russia was seen by many as sort of a third world country, and that humiliation is part of what plays into what we're seeing today.
Well, definitely. I mean, the Soviets were used to thinking themselves as one of the great world powers, and I think we forget that that actually meant a lot to many Russians, almost on a sort of personal level. And yes, I think humiliation, definitely there has been a feeling of humiliation and that somehow disrespect, you know, they've been disrespected, I think, is sort of what a lot of Russians feel. And, you know, Putin in his personal relations with Obama, I think, is trying to assert that, yeah.
You said in an interview that you're not totally surprised that Russia granted asylum to Edward Snowden. Why weren't you surprised by that?
Well, I think it was a very good opportunity for Putin to make a public relations point. And if you read the Russian newspapers, I was looking at how this is all being reported in Russia yesterday. The Russians are even spinning this as, well, how can you talk about human rights? We're the ones who are giving human rights here. We're helping this poor guy who's in this really difficult situation, and nobody else will help him out, and we're going to. So don't tell me about human rights.
There's a news report on Bloomberg today that says that the decision by President Obama to cancel a meeting during the G20 summit, he was supposed to meet with President Putin, that President Obama's cancellation because the Russians are harboring fugitive Edward Snowden is sort of seen as a joke. In fact, there was a tweet from one Russian news site that says Obama won't see Putin because Putin is already seeing Snowden. They're sort of making fun of President Obama for this.
Yes, and actually I saw it was a very funny illustration in a Russian newspaper yesterday of Putin and Obama as Matryoshka dolls, you know, those stacked little wooden dolls sort of facing off against each other. So yes, I think, you know, it's almost a source of humor perhaps, but underneath though, I think Russians really are happy. Remember, Putin is really supported by a majority of the population. We tend to report a lot about, of course, the human rights abuses, the persecution of those who are opposing the Putin regime. But in that enormous country that is Russia, you know, there really is a lot of support for Putin, maybe even more so outside of the more westernized centers, you know, like Moscow and St. Petersburg. So, you know, Putin, I think, you know, he is operating on a fairly strong basis of popular support there. And, you know, I wouldn't discount also an element of racism with regard to Obama. There is a real difficulty in Russia to deal with people of other races and colors. And I know Afro-American students from this country, for example, have been having very difficult time in Russia in recent years.
What does Russia have to gain by not giving Snowden up to the United States?
Well, I think maybe the point is, what do they have to lose? Very little. And this is something else that was reported in the Russian newspapers. What does Russia really need from America now? Not that much. You know, in the 1990s, there was a lot of economic support going towards Russia, which was supported by the Clinton administration. You know, Clinton and Yeltsin were great buddies. But Russia's in a different phase now. And another important point, I think, is that Russia has pretty good relations with Europe, with European nations. And even if European leaders disagree with some of the human rights policies and other policies of the Putin regime, they aren't trying to take any kind of retribution against them, and they have very strong commercial relations with countries like Germany and Sweden, and much, much more than with America, as a matter of fact. There's probably even less business going on between America and Russia now than there was in the 1990s. So I think this is an important point. What does Russia have to lose by doing this? Not a great deal.
Hmm. And we're going to take a break here shortly. When we come back, Professor, I want to flip that question around and ask why. What's in it for the United States to have a close relationship with Russia? What do we get out of it? And kind of maybe take a look at it from that part. A lot of other stuff to talk about as well. President Putin's recent moves against gays, not very popular internationally, but plays really well at home, particularly with the church. Lots to talk about in terms of the relationship between the United States and Russia. That's what we're talking about with Harlow Robinson, who's a professor at the Department of History at Northeastern University in Boston, who's taking time out of his vacation to talk with us this morning. You can join the conversation at 800-642-7200. 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Email address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. You can also find the Joy Cardine Program on Facebook and reach out that way. Leave your comment or question there. Again, 800-642-1234. If you have questions about our relationship with Russia, what do you think of Russia giving asylum to Edward Snowden? And is President Obama doing the right thing, not meeting with Vladimir Putin? How should the U.S. approach Russia, given concerns over missile defense, arms control, trade, human rights, and other issues? What questions do you have about Russia and its relationship to the United States? 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine, this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network this week. And this hour, we're talking about the state of relations between the United States and Russia. My guest is Harlow Robinson, Matthews Distinguished University Professor in the Department of History at Northeastern University in Boston. He's an expert in Russian history and culture. And, Professor, we kind of talked about what's in it for the Russians and how they view this relationship. Why is this relationship important to the United States? What do we have to gain from having close ties with Russia?
Well, I think there are a few areas. Obviously, international affairs and the situation in Syria, for example. It seems to be recognized generally that without some Russian help, in Syria, that situation cannot possibly improve. You know, the Russians have a very big investment there. There's a lot of Russians living in Syria, and of course they've supported that regime for many years. And generally speaking, in that region, you know, we have to remember Russia borders this region. You know, they're so much closer to it culturally and geographically. Afghanistan, Iran, these are very important areas in which we're going to have to continue to have relations. And it is important to remember that tomorrow there is going to be a meeting between the defense ministers and the foreign affairs ministers on the Russian and American side in Washington. That meeting is going ahead. So even though this high-level meeting between Putin and Obama in Moscow following the G20 summit has been canceled, there still are lots of other meetings going on a lower level to maintain this relationship. I mean, Obama and his people are certainly realize they can't sever relations with Russia. It's simply impossible. So, you know, in many ways, this is really a symbolic gesture. I mean, I don't know how much would have been accomplished in a short meeting anyway. It was really more of a symbolic gesture. And, you know, if we look back at the history of Russian-American, Soviet-American relations, you know, these summit meetings between the leaders, they were always such huge events, you know, Khrushchev and Kennedy and so on, Eisenhower meeting in Vienna. They were always these very symbolic events, you know. And I think we've entered an era where, in many ways, they're actually less important. As a matter of fact, and there are other ways. The countries have many more other avenues of communication than was the case during the Cold War. I mean, Russians are traveling freely back and forth between Russia and America. So it's really a whole new world in terms of communications between the countries, and not to mention internet and all sorts of other communications that will go on. So We need the Russians, certainly, in terms of international affairs. There are certainly some commercial interests as well.
And what we've seen from President Putin is he loves the camera, likes to appear in public bare-chested, apparently likes to fish, ride horses. He projects this image of this very, very masculine leader. Is this an example? Do we have? And I hate to drag this phrase out of history here, but are we seeing a little bit of a resurgence of a kind of a cult of personality in terms of Putin as a leader?
Oh, I think there's no question about that. There are so many signs of that. The way that he's presented in the media. And, you know, one hates to use stereotypes about any nationality, but I do think the Russians in many ways are more comfortable, maybe more familiar with a strong man leadership kind of situation. And I think, once again, if you look back to the 90s and Yeltsin, you know, Yeltsin, the great Democrat, but he was such a sort of messy, inefficient leader in so many ways. And Putin is really his exact opposite. I mean, Yeltsin, the big drinker, you know, who would show up at public events drunk. Putin, who doesn't touch alcohol. So there's this very strong contrast between them. And Putin has made it very clear that he will not tolerate dissent, certainly not in his inner circle, and even those who attempt to oppose him politically. I mean, the Khodorkovsky is still in prison. The oligarch who wanted to challenge him politically, he's still sitting in prison. And recently was arrested Alexei Navalny, the blogger, who was sort of the focus of political opposition to Putin. Interestingly, he was released from prison, and he's even trying to run for mayor of Moscow. But whether he'll be allowed to go through with that seems to be an open question. So, yes, I think definitely there is a cult of personality that has developed around Putin. And I also would say this return of these Soviet emblems that he has brought back has only sort of encouraged this idea.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a call from Jim in Minnesota. Jim, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. My question for Professor Robertson is, what is the likelihood that the Russia and Putin was motivated by the curiosity of the FBS to access all of the data that Edgar Snowden brought with him to Moscow? That's my first question. The second question is, I recall reading that every year in the 90s, every day in the 90s, the United States would ship $300 million in $100 bills to Russia every day to prop up the economy. Is that still going on? And then my other question is, what happened to the legacy of Stalin and whose record, according to Milovan Djilis, was the greatest criminal in the history of mankind? Have the Russians already forgotten that? Thank you.
Lots to chew on there, Professor. We might not finish all of that before we get to the news, but let's start with the first one. Was part of the motivation for giving asylum to Edward Snowden the thought that the Russian FDS would have access to the secrets that he was carrying?
I suppose that's possible. You know, I think it's very hard for us to know that. We have no idea what kind of an agreement Snowden made with the Russians. You know, I certainly don't envy Snowden. He's basically a prisoner now. He's a prisoner in Russia, and the Russian authorities have made it very clear over the years that they're not very dainty in dealing with prisoners of any kind. It's certainly possible motivation that they feel they're going to get information from him that would be interesting to them. But they do a lot of other kinds of surveillance, so that would not be the only way they could probably get a lot of that information. Now, your second question was about propping up the Russian government. There's not very much of that happening now. You know, the Russian economy is actually in relatively good condition, largely because of prices for natural gas and oil, and the standard of living has definitely risen in Russia quite significantly. You do have a real middle class that's at least emerging there. They don't really need our economic assistance anymore. They don't have a national deficit, by the way, as we do. Third, Stalin. It's a very good and interesting question. I would agree with you, and in the courses I teach on history of the Soviet Union, I always point this out. I mean, if we count up the number of victims of Hitler and of Stalin, I think Stalin, the numbers are greater in the Stalin column. And this is a very big issue, I think. The Russians have not come to terms with the Stalinist past. I mean, for example, in Germany, There's been so much guilt in the post-war period. They, of course, were the losers, and they had to come to terms with what had happened in Germany. They opened the concentration camps as museums. There was a national sort of breastfeeding about what had gone on, and there still is in Germany. In Russia, there's been remarkably little observation of the millions of lives that were lost as a result of Stalin's terror. There's been a real reluctance on Putin's part and the people around him to recognize Stalin as a criminal. I would say, if anything, Putin has been going in the opposite direction towards trying to treat Stalin as also a positive figure. And it is a very complicated question. After all, Stalin did industrialize this massive nation. He brought education, health care to lots of people who had nothing like that in the 1930s. So it's an extremely difficult issue, but I don't think the Russians have begun to really cope with the moral issues of that.
Okay, we need to take a break for the news. We'll come back. We'll have more of our conversation with Harlow Robinson and with you at 800-642-1234. We're talking about the state of relations between the United States and Russia. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The United States and Russia. What's up with that? Relations between the two countries have hit a rough patch, to say the least, after Russian President Vladimir Putin granted asylum to intelligence contractor Edward Snowden. President Obama canceled a scheduled meeting with his counterpart when he goes to Moscow for the G20 summit in September. So what does that mean? And what about the long-term prospects for our relationship with Russia? We're talking about that this hour with Harlow Robinson Matthews, Distinguished University Professor in the Department of History at Northeastern University in Boston. He's an expert in Russian history and culture. He's visited Russia 25 times since 1970. Well, Professor, we ended the previous segment. We were talking about how the Russians haven't really come to terms with what happened under Stalin. And you've made several references to President Putin kind of reviving symbols of the old Soviet Union. Is there sort of a little bit of a rose-colored glasses look backwards, like we were better off when we were the Soviet Union than we are now, or is there just some romanticization of the history of Russia, just like pretty much every other country tends to romanticize their history?
Well, definitely. I mean, I think one big factor for older Russians, of course, is the whole experience of World War II. You know, after all, Stalin was their great leader through World War II, and it is something of a miracle that the Soviet Union was able to defeat Hitler. If you look at the situation that the Soviet Union was in the 1920s and 30s, this very poor, underdeveloped nation that became this great industrial power. It was the Russians who took Berlin, who saved the world. So there's a great deal of patriotic romanticism associated with that. Of course, there aren't too many veterans of that period left. But I think many people, baby boomer age, let's say, do feel like they were better off under the old Soviet Union. They didn't really have to worry about much of anything, you know. It's true that they didn't have a very high standard of living, but everybody sort of had more or less, except the Communist Party elite, the same standard of living. They had free health care, free education. They just, in many ways, didn't have to worry about a lot of things that they do now. They feel like their life is much more stressful now, I think many people do. And the 1990s, you know, people in their 40s and 50s, for example, they really lost almost everything. People who were about to retire suddenly found that they were penniless, that their pensions were worth nothing. I think there's a lot of people in Russia today who think that it's really too bad that the Soviet Union collapsed the way it did. Interesting, of course, Gorbachev, he's still around. He runs a think tank. He's an extremely unpopular figure in Russia, almost an object of ridicule, whereas in the West, of course, he's regarded as something of a hero. So, yeah, I think there definitely is, in many people, a feeling of nostalgia for the Soviet past, which can be quite dangerous, although, as you point out, every country has these kind of romantic myths about its past. But Stalin is a very special case. I mean, he was in power for 25 years. And listen, we have to remember at one point we in America thought Stalin was pretty okay also. We were putting him on the cover of Time magazine and making movies about him in Hollywood during World War II. So, things change.
Yeah. President Obama was interviewed by Jay Leno this week. Leno asked him about the difficulties with Russia, and here's part of what President Obama had to say.
A lot of what's been going on hasn't been major breaks in the relationship, mm-hmm. and they still help us on supplying our troops in Afghanistan. They're still helping us on counterterrorism work. They were helpful after the Boston bombing in that investigation. And so there's still a lot of business that we can do with them, but there have been times where they slip back into Cold War thinking and, right. and a Cold War mentality. And what I consistently say to them and what I say to President Putin is that's the past. And you know, we've got to think about the future, and there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to cooperate more yeah. effectively than we do.
So, Professor Robinson, President Obama says Russia's stuck in that old-school style of thinking. Can we expect President Putin and Russia to change, or are things going to continue pretty much the way they have?
I think as long as Putin is in power, they're going to continue pretty much the way they are now. I think he's sort of found this in some ways as a successful wedge issue. And maybe also a way to distract attention from other issues that are going on in Russia today, a huge economic inequality, for example. Russians are extremely patriotic, you know, and I think sometimes Americans underestimate this fact that they regard Russia, well, it's just that they all are so miserable, they must hate where they live. Well, that's not true at all, of course. And I mean, we also have our Cold War attitudes towards Russia. And I think that Putin also realizes that in the world today, there are many governments and countries that have great resentment towards the United States, view the United States as a bully. And I think that Putin very skillfully plays to that audience as well. And, you know, we will always have to deal with Russia. There's simply no way around it. It's a country that occupies one-sixth of the world's surface. So just geopolitically, there is no way we cannot have a relationship with Russia. I mean, the cancellation of this meeting between Obama and Putin, I think, ultimately is a pretty small blip. And it doesn't have anything like the power of some of these events during the Cold War. Because, as I mentioned earlier, we have so many more avenues of communication. I mean, for example, I teach students at Northeastern. I have Russian students who are just regular undergraduates enrolled. This was simply unheard of to think about even in the Soviet period. No Soviet students could possibly come and have their parents pay for them to go to an American university. So these students, you know, they go home. They've seen the world. They've experienced America. So this is also going to change Russia over time.
Mm-hmm. What about, we briefly touched on human rights earlier in the program, but specifically in recent months, the Russians have really started to crack down on gays. And President Putin seems to be adamant about stomping out homosexuality in Russia. He has the support of the church, which is one of his major backers. What's going on with that?
Yes, it's a very distressing development, certainly. One of the things that has happened since the collapse of the Soviet Union is that the Russian government has become very close to the Russian Orthodox Church. This was something that happened right away, really, around 1992. I remember I was in Russia on Easter that year, and Yeltsin was shown on the television going to Easter services. And this is only accelerated during the Putin era. He's drawn closer and closer to the leadership of the Russian Orthodox Church, which is very conservative on the issue of homosexuality. And I think, once again, it's a kind of cultural wedge issue. I think some Russians view homosexuality somehow as a Western import, which is, you know, a crazy idea. But in the 1990s, actually, Yeltsin, and this was one of the best things he did, in my opinion, he was very much a champion of alternative lifestyles. And he actually canceled the law against homosexuality, outlawing homosexuality that was on the books during the Soviet era, was repealed. There were gay rights conferences. Gay magazines started to publish. Gay bars opened for the first time ever. And this, unfortunately, in the since 2000, has been sort of going backwards. So, yes, it's a very unfortunate situation.
What are the implications, given that issue, what are the implications for the Olympics upcoming? Is that going to be a huge problem?
Well, this is, you know, the Olympics have always been a very interesting arena to observe with Soviet-American relations. I mean, if you look back, think back in history of how often the Olympics became a very symbolic political event. Lake Placid, when the American hockey team defeated the heavily favored Soviets in 1980, right after the Soviets invaded Afghanistan. And then, of course, President Carter canceling the American participation in the Moscow Olympics of 1980, which was then returned, the Soviets returned the favor in 1984 by not going to the Los Angeles Olympics. So especially, you know, during the Cold War, the Olympics was one of the few arenas where the Soviets and Americans faced off against each other directly. And so it took on this enormous cultural kind of significance. It doesn't have that same power today because there are so many other avenues of contact. But I think I'm hopeful, actually, that the American and other Western athletes will make a show of solidarity with the embattled gay population of Russia. And there has been a lot of conversation about that. I don't think there'll be a boycott. I don't think that's really even necessarily a very good idea. But I think it will be perhaps an opportunity for American and Western athletes to show their solidarity with the Russian gays. And as we all know, there's certainly gay athletes involved in the sports here, in figure skating, for example. Some of the American figure skaters have been very out. So we'll see how that plays out. Should be interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. We're going to take a short break. Wondering to our listeners, what do you think about our relationship with Russia? How should we be approaching them, given concerns over things like missile defense? There's a topic we haven't touched on yet. Arms control, trade, human rights, other issues. What questions do you have about Russia and about our relationship with that country? We have an expert with us for the rest of this hour, what's left of it, Harlow Robinson, Matthews Distinguished University Professor at the Department of History at Northeastern University, is my guest this hour. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Joy Cardine program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about the state of the relationship between the United States and Russia. We've hit a little bit of a rough patch, and kind of wondering what that means and assessing the state of relations between the United States and Russia. My guest is a Russian history and culture expert, Harlow Robinson, Matthews Distinguished University Professor in the Department of History at Northeastern University. And we had, let's see if I can get back up to it. We have an email that I should share from Steve. it's a Facebook post from Steve who says, I think Obama was right to cancel his meeting with President Putin. He cited Russia's human rights record as well, and I'm sure the recently adopted propaganda laws also played a part. But the Snowden case seems to have tipped the scales the rest of the way. So was the Snowden case just kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, Professor?
Yes, and actually I was looking at, as I said, Russian newspapers yesterday, and they were also writing that, well, this was really just the last straw in a relationship that already was in trouble and sort of stalled. You know, there was this reset of Russian relations, you know, a few years ago, following the Russian-Georgian war over Ossetia. And when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, there was this idea, okay, we have to try to reset relations. Well, the Russian newspapers were all saying, that's all history now. Forget about the reset. that's just gone. And really, what the Russian view seems to be on this is there is no basis, in a way, for a relationship between America and Russia right now, that it's sort of in a state of limbo, and the Russians actually accusing the United States of not being able to develop relations with Russia on an equal basis, that the United States, they're accusing the United States of having the Cold War attitude, of being sort of the dominant partner in the free world, and that this is no longer the case, and that it's the Americans who have to rethink how they deal with Russia now. So, yeah, I think the Snowden case, it was just one final thing in an already accumulating list of frustrations, I think you could say, frustrations in the relationship, including Syria, where the Russians have not really been as helpful as the Americans would want.
We also have an email from John who has 2 points to make. One is that President Obama looks too weak to the Russians. And two, perhaps allowing Snowden to stay is payback. People forget that in the 90s, Clinton would not extradite a Russian general back to his homeland. So let's take the first point. President Obama looks weak to the Russians.
Yes, that might be true. I think, as I said earlier, I think it's also perhaps difficult for Russians to see an Afro-American as president. I think there are definitely is some racism in the response to Obama. So maybe that is true, that they see Obama as a not very strong figure. The second part was
What about the our emailer is suggesting that allowing Snowden asylum is payback for the fact that in the 90s President Clinton wouldn't extradite a Russian general back to his homeland.
Yes, actually, that's a very good point, and it was also in one of the articles I read in the Russian media yesterday, exactly that point, that the United States had been guilty of the same kind of thing in the past.
Let's talk about a couple of other topics here as we come to the end of the hour, and we've only got about 5 minutes left, but there have been issues between the United States and Russia on other topics as well, arms control. Some people forget there still are some nuclear weapons left on both sides of this relationship. Also, there's been discussion about missile defense. What are some of the issues here, and what do you think it's going to take to resolve them?
Well, I think, you know, this is once again a very prickly issue for the Russians, I think. You know, Putin likes to saber-rattle. He likes to project the image of Russia as a great power in the world and as a reaction against that sort of weakened image of Russia that emerged in the 1990s. So I think any negotiations while he's still in office on missile control are going to have to take that into account and may not be as fruitful as the Americans would wish. Also, of course, there's the whole issue of these other, the stands, you know, the countries that were formerly part of the Soviet Union, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and so on. Very unstable regions where the Russians still have enormous cultural cultural and even political power. This is also something that the Americans are going to have to deal with Russia on these issues, particularly considering Afghanistan. So I don't think that we're in anything like a crisis right now. I don't think that Putin is advocating any kind of break in relations, but I think he's exercising this kind of maybe not so gentle, but power to show that the United States cannot treat the Russians as the weaker partner in the relationship.
So what should our approach to be should be going forward? I mean, the current differences, they'll just blow over at some point. How should we proceed from here?
Well, I think I think that it's important that we maintain these relations on a somewhat lower level. As I said, there is going to be this meeting tomorrow between the Secretary of State the foreign affairs ministers on both sides and the defense ministers. And it's extremely important that those kinds of connections continue, obviously. And maybe the presidential level is in some ways not as important. As I said, I think as long as Russians are coming to America, they're traveling the world, they're seeing different ways of living, this will lead to change in Russia eventually. And we have seen the manifestation of political dissent, mass demonstrations. And actually, I read in the Russian media yesterday that 300,000 Russians had signed a petition protesting this anti-gay propaganda law. So it's the civil society. It's still in birth stage in Russia, but I think it will continue to grow. Putin won't be in power forever. And, you know, a new generation may actually handle this quite differently, these students who are coming to American universities to be educated. So, I mean, in the long run, I think I'm relatively hopeful about the situation.
Okay. Well, that's where we'll leave it then, on a note of hope. Thank you so much, Professor, particularly since you're on vacation this week. Really appreciate your time this morning.
Okay. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Harlow Robinson, Matthews Distinguished University Professor in the Department of History at Northeastern University in Boston, an expert on Russian history and culture. We had, Bill Martins produced this hour of programming and Christy Taylor directed it. Thank you so much to both of them. Justin Williams handled on-air production. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.